Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show. Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet me at JBBriscoe over on Twitter.com. At Beards McFly, running the board today. Back-to-back days, we've been here 2 days in a row, Beards and I, and we just had a nice conversation during the break about Caillou, the kids show from... It's not still airing, is it?
I hope not.
It can't still be airing.
Now I gotta look.
It was a bad show, and in retrospect, Caillou definitely had some sort of...
It's still running.
Deadly disease. Really?
But there's no new episodes.
Okay, so they're running reruns and stuff because PBS doesn't, you know, have very deep pockets anymore. Listen, I can get behind defunding PBS if it means getting Caillou out of the minds of our country's children.
His name in French means pebble.
Really?
Yeah. Now I gotta look this up though, because this is Wikipedia.
They keep making fun of his baldness. This is not cool at all. Anyway. The Chiefs are always at least slightly interesting at this point, at least in the framework of what's not interesting with the Kansas City Royals. Oh no, Beards just discovered something.
It's correct.
Pebble?
Pebble.
Pebble.
I typed pebble into Google Translator, and it came out.
Caillou.
A little bald head. It didn't even come out as the word.
It just drew a little bald boy.
And the theme song started playing in the background.
I'm just a kid who each day I learn some more. I'm Caillou. I wanted to talk about the Chiefs, damn it. This is a sports show. Not a kid's show. Talking about Caillou. This started because Beard is reading a story about Paw Patrol on Deadspin. Which, again, all of that whole sentence makes no sense to anybody. My sister watches Paw Patrol, though. Paw Patrol seems fun.
See, I was hoping it was going to be like the Why Your Team Sucks articles that Deadspin does.
Yes.
Where they have like all the fan comments at the bottom that are just ripping it. It's not the case. I was very disappointed.
They need to amend that.
Those are
great
the best
idea.
Part of the football season for me.
I mean, that's a little bit much.
For
but
me.
Still, that they need to amend that. They need to have like angry parents writing in about why each show... careful. Why each show sucks. Your show sucks is what it could be called. That would be great. Anyway, one more time. The Chiefs are the most interesting team in town right now. A shout out to Sporting Kansas City. If you want it, I don't know anything about Sporting. That's my ignorance. I have to just let that be my ignorance for now. But the Chiefs are in an interesting place because there's a lot of stability. And one thing, I will talk to Matt Connor here coming up next on the show about all sorts of Chiefs things. So this is going to be a nice Chiefs 45-minute block or whatever for you thirsty, thirsty Chiefs fans. Of which I am one. But the Chiefs pretty much have stability across the board. The defense is coming back virtually untouched, with the exception of Benny Logan coming in for Dontari Poe. And Benny Logan isn't exactly a huge question mark. He's not the type of replacement you go, man, well, I'm a little bit worried about this guy stepping in to fill in the shoes for our former nose tackle who really had it all together. Dontari Poe was good at everything and great at very little. He wasn't a completely shut-down run stuffer. He wasn't a dominant up-the-middle pass rusher. Dontari Poe was good at everything. Now, to see how the defense changes around Benny Logan at the middle, I'm interested and excited for that. That's really the difference on defense. If Derek Johnson can come back healthy and not looking significantly slower, the inside of the defense is going to be in really good hands. Justin March Lillard has shown development whenever he's been healthy. Ramiq Wilson took huge strides last year. He went from being literally released, I think multiple times, to being the unquestioned starter in the middle. And DJ Alexander had some nice snaps. The inside linebacker position is thinner than most, but it's not different than last year. Outside linebacker is a little concerning, but not different than last year. Dee Ford and Justin Houston have an offseason to get healthy, and whenever they come back, you've got to see some results. You've got to finally get both of them running at the same time. And if you do, this defense is going to be unstoppable. If you don't, then all of a sudden you're giving snaps to a decrepit Tom Bahali, a very, very raw Daddy Nicholas. And that, at this point, that is still the area of the team that I have the most concerns about going into training camp and OTAs or whatever. That's my personal place of most uncertainty. Pro Football Focus tweeted about Justin Houston, actually. And they tweeted that over the last four seasons, no defender has generated pressure at a higher rate than Justin Houston. The problem is that over the last four seasons, Justin Houston's only played 16 games one time. I believe it ended up being something like 11 games, 16 games, 11 games, and before that, he had the more significant injury after that. The rate of pressure is great, but the actual number of snaps has been far too few. And I don't feel like we've seen full-on Justin Houston for a while now. And now, again, a lot of guys say that it takes 2 years before you can fully recuperate from a catastrophic knee injury. And I hope that's the case for Justin Houston. I hope that this year, this second year, is whenever he comes back looking like himself again. And it seems to me like the Chiefs are betting on it. Or at the very least, that they already have bet on it with his giant contract. And now it's simply a matter of, we've got to ride this out because we don't have any other options. They picked up Dee Ford's fifth-year option, which was a very obvious move after not drafting an outside linebacker in the draft. So he's here for one more season after this upcoming one. But going into his fourth year, we still have a huge number of questions for Dee Ford. We saw his highlights last year. We saw his ceiling last year, and that was very exciting and extremely interesting. But whenever Justin Houston came back, Dee Ford disappeared. Tom Bahali is an $8 to $9 million cap hit and is too old to produce reliably. Daddy Nicholas is a developmental guy. I expected to see the Chiefs address outside linebacker relatively early, and they didn't. And they didn't with inside linebacker either, which means they are the three positions on this team. They're putting faith in the positions, and one other guy is inside linebacker, outside linebacker, and corner. The safety position is absolutely stacked. Eric Berry, Ron Parker, Daniel Sorensen, Eric Murray. They drafted Leon McQuay. And they've brought in some secondary guys who have significant special teams experience, which is a huge part of what Dave Taub and the Chiefs overall look for in their back-end secondary guys. But the safety position, absolutely loaded. The corners, however, you have all the faith in the world in Marcus Peters. Then you start to kind of look around and go, wait a second. Where's the answer opposite of him? Terrence Mitchell had a fantastic year last year. A fantastic last several games whenever he was given that number one job opposite Marcus Peters. He went up against great competition and produced at a very, very high level. But the logical, fair, useful question on the mind of most Chiefs fans was, do we trust that? Do we buy that as the real Terrence Mitchell? Is that repeatable? In much the same way that we ask, is Derek Johnson trustworthy? Is his health and his age going to stay out of the way? Much in the same way that we ask, is Justin Houston's health going to return? And for all of those questions, the Chiefs have said, yeah, we trust our guys. We're sticking by our guns here. We're not going to go try to bring in a number two corner. We're not going to go try to bring in the future inside linebacker. We're not going to go try to bring in another pass rusher. All across the board, at those places, the Chiefs have said this. They've said, we are sticking with our guy, and we're sticking with Bob Sutton. Bob Sutton has been tremendous at covering up the flaws of the Chiefs' defense. He's been doing it for a while. As long as he can have an area of the team to rely on, he can cover up somewhere else. The best place to have a strong unit at is at the inside pass rushing zone. If you get pressure up the middle, everything else, everything for the offense has to speed up, and everything for the defense slows down. Which is one reason that I think Benny Logan is going to be a huge piece of this defense. And also, Dontari Poe, again, for all the things that he did well, he was not exceptional at creating pressure up the middle. At least not on a consistent basis. Chris Jones can do that. Alan Bailey is going to do that. Jay Howard is gone. He would have done that. But for my money. If the Chiefs can get pressure on their own, Bob Sutton is just a kid in a candy store. But the thing he does best is help generate pressure. And again, I look at this defense, and I'm excited for what next year is going to look like because I trust the safeties completely. The defensive line is looking extremely solid. The talent is absolutely there at the pass for the pass rushers. Because it's Justin Houston and Dee Ford and Tom Bahali. But I have questions about the feasibility of those guys sticking around at the level that we expect them to be at, or at least the level that we would hope for them to be at. And Terrence Mitchell was fantastic last year. And we might not trust him. You and I might not trust him in full. But the Chiefs seem to. And if they don't, at the very least, they trust their depth. And I think they have great depth at corner. But I thought there was at least a chance they would say, what we need is one more guy up top to put opposite Marcus Peters. Because the depth of Terrence Mitchell, Phil Gaines, Steven Nelson, even Kenneth Acker had a few nice plays. DJ White. And obviously Terrence Mitchell. The depth that those guys would provide would give you a really tremendous secondary. But now, I think it's certainly Terrence Mitchell's job to lose. There's a competition, though, for that number two spot. And I said this last year, and it didn't pan out all that well. The only thing that matters is that somebody wins it. As long as somebody wins that job, everything's going to be all right. Now, the problem is that last year didn't happen. Philip Gaines didn't win it last year. Steven Nelson didn't win it last year. Kaveri Russell certainly didn't win that job last year. But I think Terrence Mitchell is the favorite right now. And as long as somebody takes that number two spot, the secondary is going to come together really, really nicely. Whenever we come back, we'll talk to Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict about a few more of the things to watch as this Chiefs season gets closer to becoming a reality and we all collectively do our very, very best to avoid talking about the Royals. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
People are about to destroy you on Twitter.
I know, I'm ready for it. Oh, but if you want to destroy me on Twitter, it's at JB Briscoe.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Follow me, then destroy me.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Now joining me on the phone is the grand poobah of Arrowhead Addict, the editor, Matt Connor, formerly of SB Nation. You can find him on Twitter at MattConnorAA, joining me here to talk about any and all things Chiefs. We haven't spoken, have we talked ever, Matt, before this?
You know, I don't know. We've exchanged pleasantries online,
right,
flirted here and there.
Right.
I'm sure went back and forth over Chiefs issues, but yeah, I think this may be our first live face-to-face, even
right,
though we're not face-to-face.
It's like mouth-to-ear or something. And also, I guess what we both just admitted is if this isn't the first time, we should both treat it as it was, because if we have talked previously, it was incredibly unmemorable.
Yeah, I hope I have a better impression on that, on most people overall.
Yes, yeah, so we have a chance to either make good first impressions or to make good second impressions that feel like first ones.
I'm up for the challenge.
There are so many things that we can talk about now because of the place we're at with the Chiefs, where there's kind of everything happening and also nothing happening. And since we haven't talked, especially since the draft, the board is wide open. But the thing that you've been doing recently on Arrowhead Addict that I've found particularly interesting is you've been talking to several former coaches of guys who ended up being Chiefs draft picks. And in the super macro, What are a couple of things from all of those conversations that have stood out to you that you kind of take away from the whole thing? Maybe an overarching theme or a specific conversation that really stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I had the chance really with everyone from Cliff Kingsbury. I talked to him, mm-hmm, the head coach at Texas Tech, about Patrick Mahomes, all the way to Georgia Southern's head coach Tyson Summers, about the Chiefs' fifth round pick. Ukeme Eligwe, which,
nice,
they just call him Marcus, so maybe we should just learn to call him Marcus as well. But Kareem Hunt's coach at Toledo, all over the place. It's like one of the things that almost every head coach has had to say is that they had no or very little idea that the Chiefs were even interested in their guy. And that happens with a ton of guys. I even just interviewed, the Chiefs just signed a new defensive tackle, Ricky Ala-Ifua from Utah State, as one of the tryout players who made the team.
Right.
And he said, I didn't even know that the Chiefs even knew who I was until they, like, called me and said, please come, like, right now to Kansas City to try out for our team. And he said, I'd been in contact with the Broncos on a daily basis, other teams on a weekly or every other day basis, texting me all the time. And then here come the Chiefs at the last minute and not only get them to try out, but then sign them. And it was that way with all the college coaches too, or at least the majority of them, that the Chiefs just play with their cards as close to the vest as possible and have apparently a very airtight front office.
That's really interesting, because I wonder the purpose of it. I guess if you can pull it off, why not? But if you're dealing with kind of high-level draft picks, maybe you're just trying, you know, to be able to move up. The Chiefs did a lot of moving up throughout this draft, but trying to protect the guys that you want. But even with guys like undrafted free agents, that's a very interesting fact of their way of operation. I don't. That's not another question,
yeah,
in there anyway. I find that super interesting.
In the 24/7, like all access, you know, where people are trying to work favors and do well for friends, and, you know, I scratch your back now, you'll help later.
Right.
I'm just surprised that the Chiefs can keep things as airtight as they can compared to the professionalism of other organizations, where you just see a constant set of leaks or, rumors. I mean, you just never even hear the Chiefs playing the rumor game. And what's interesting, even I think about Mahomes, like it was so well telegraphed that the Chiefs were going to take a first-round quarterback. I mean, all of the homework, you know, the perfect financial timing of maybe being able to replace Alex Smith next year. I mean, it makes so much sense that everyone was projecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, and then after the draft, you hear all of these teams that wanted Mahomes. I mean, there were five other NFL teams who either leaked or said outright, we want Patrick Mahomes too. Mm-hmm. And yet somehow the Chiefs, with everyone knowing where they could move up or win or that they would want to, still were able to do it and surprise everyone. I just think that's the level of the, you know, the shroud of secrecy around John Dorsey and Andy Reid and their operations there, and also the fact that they absolutely know what they're doing, that they could step in, get their guy, make everyone else upset, and have no one know what they were doing, even though everyone kind of knew what they were doing.
So in that move up for Patrick Mahomes, obviously there's no question about, you know, is he the plan for the future? Everyone from Alex Smith to Pat Mahomes to the Chiefs Twitter account on draft day knew that Patrick Mahomes is the next man up. But I'm curious as to your personal take on the move up to get Mahomes, the cost of it, and what the future begins to look like. Obviously, well, I don't want to say obviously, but the overall consensus seems to be that Mahomes is going to benefit greatly from taking a year to sort of sit and learn under Andy Reid and to some degree under Alex Smith, learn the system and everything. But again, that was a very macro question. But what were your large scale thoughts on the entire Mahomes ordeal?
Yeah, I have two primary thoughts here. One is, no matter what I think personally, my job and livelihood and reputation are not on the line making this choice.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I trust the guys who are.
Yep.
So if John Dorsey and Andy Reid are high-fiving each other because they paid what they paid to get the guy that they want, I have to trust that, regardless of, you know, what little film I've seen or what direction I wanted them to go. I think the other thing here, too, that's important to really understand is no one at all is talking about the trade value of Alex Smith after this year.
Hmm, interesting.
So it's very clear the Chiefs, like, you know, they traded an extra first rounder and an extra third rounder in order to flip flop the first round pick. So essentially they gave up an extra first, extra three. Are you telling me that they can't at the very least recoup the extra three? And I think they could recoup the extra one and then some for Alex Smith. I mean, you're talking about next year, Smith's going to be probably, what, I think 33, and probably coming off of 50 wins in five seasons for the Chiefs. I mean, let's say the Chiefs can win 9 games this year. That means that Smith will have led them to 50 wins in the regular season, their first postseason win in however long, the biggest comeback in franchise history, with most of his 30s still ahead of him. Now, I know next year's draft class is supposedly loaded with Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and company. And Kirk Cousins is going to be – I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to hit free agency. Mm-hmm. So next year is when a lot of teams are going to find a brand-new starting quarterback. However, of all of those, there will not be one guy ready to step in and win immediately more than Alex Smith if the Chiefs want to make him available. And if that's the case, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that John Dorsey will recoup a first-round pick for him, and maybe more, given just the crazy amounts that – I mean, the Texans traded a second-round pick just to get rid of Brock Osweiler.
Right.
So, yeah, I, you know, people talk about the price paid for him, but I honestly think they'll get – I think they'll recoup at least some and maybe all of that when Mahomes is the guy.
That's fascinating. You're right. I haven't heard anyone having that conversation, and it totally makes sense. Like, really, the value for quarterbacks across the board, as long as you stand up for the national anthem, is incredible.
Well played.
I think that's fascinating. The idea that whenever you say, you know, and also the first potentially, it seems crazy, but you back up, and you know, guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh McCown are getting backup jobs. You look at the starters around, maybe Alex Smith ends up being kind of the consolation prize to a team who doesn't get Kirk Cousins or Garoppolo or one of those rookies. That's fascinating.
Yeah, to me, he's, you know, next year we're going to see a few guys go up top, and then you're going to see someone else, you know, take that second round rookie or something, and you know, it's the perfect kind of scenario for, I mean, like this year it would have been the perfect scenario for the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
You know, they invested a second rounder in Deshone Kizer, and then, you know, to have an extra first, you flip that to the Chiefs, and then you can let Kizer ride the bench for a good 2, even 3 years
mm-hmm.
as he learns and have an instant professional winner up front. I mean, you know, Alex has been nothing but class for this organization, and I have no doubt that John Dorsey thinks that the 2 second-rounders he paid for him are, you know, 2 of the best picks he's ever invested. So, some other team will make that same move in their own way to get a slightly older Alex Smith, you know, who still is clearly capable.
I know we're way out from that, but I'm just thinking about the AFC South right now, because this year the Texans would have been that team. Basically, the Texans would have been signing up for what the Chiefs are going to be doing, obviously. But even a team like the Jags next year, if they keep investing in everything except for Blake Bortles, and the next year they come around deciding that they've got a pretty good team in a takeable division, but Blake Bortles is just he is a detriment to their team. Giving up a third round pick for a chance to take the AFC South next year, you know, a year after next year, I suppose, makes all the sense in the world. I think that's a great look at it that I hadn't considered.
Yeah, you know, I could see them making the move. I think there are a few other teams that even think about a team like, let's say next year, you know, supposedly Ben Roethlisberger is flirting now every year with retiring. I mean, right. He does not have the live arm. It would dramatically change the, you know, the Pittsburgh's ability to go deep to Antonio Brown and that kind of a thing. But, you know, if Pittsburgh still felt like the window was open and they had the live, you know, the talent to keep making a run for it, you know, why wouldn't you try out? And, you know, and if they didn't feel like they had the guy on their bench, you know, to supplant Roethlisberger, you know, yeah, why wouldn't you make a move for you know, a still ready quarterback? The Chiefs just decided to make their move early. They found their man, Mahomes, and so they made their move. And every team has to make that move at some point. But some other team will benefit from Alex Smith still being capable of winning in the NFL for some time.
I love it. One thing also here in the backfield that I feel like has become a little bit of the talking point, maybe just of this week, I don't know, but is the question of how is the Chiefs' backfield ultimately going to play out? With what you've seen from Kareem Hunt, with what you know of Spencer Ware, Charkandrick West, if you want to bring CJ Spiller into the fold, you're welcome to. I'm going to leave him outside for now. Where do you see the running back situation developing to by training camp, by the regular season, by the end of the season? How do you see that developing and changing?
You know, I think we're going to have to pay very close attention to how they line these guys up, like, very early on in training camp. Because the Chiefs aren't afraid to put their guy there. Like, I remember Mitch Morse when they took him in the second round. He'd played all over the line at Mizzou and in the quotes, in like rookie minicamp, they would not say Mitch Morse is our starting center. You know, they just talked about his versatility. They talked about the other guys. But then when it came to lining up and actually starting to earn reps, they put him exactly where they wanted him from the earliest time that they could, and they let him learn from that point forward.
Right.
And so suddenly Mitch Morse was starting center from the get-go. Last year they did the same with Parker Ehinger from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a fourth-round guy. They throw him in at left guard in front of Fulton, in front of Ja Reed, in front of anyone else who could have done it. And they gave him the job until he was injured. And so, you know, to me, I don't know why they wouldn't do the same. Like, you know, I mean, remember, Dorsey moved up to get his man 3 times in this draft, and Kareem Hunt was one such guy. And then he praised him as the single best back available in the second tier of backs. So you're assuming he's talking about Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, maybe Dalvin Cook, you know, maybe Joe Mixon. I mean, he didn't define that first tier, but you got to assume it's like 2 to 4 guys. So if Kareem is on that next level, you know, his college coach, Markel Blackwell from Toledo, told me, you know, he said the one thing that the Chiefs know so well to do is to get the exact guy to fit their exact needs. And he said, "I'm familiar enough with Andy Reid's schemes and offense to know that the Kareem is the perfect fit for what they need a guy to do." So, kind of trusting both sides on that, you know, if they want Kareem to make a maximum impact, they'll say something now nice about Spencer Ware and Sharkhandrick and others. Mm-hmm. But what I think when it comes down to it, if they want Kareem to play, they're going to play him front and center first thing, and their actions will speak louder than any words at this point, you know, when the depth chart begins to come out.
That, yeah, looking to training camp and finding more importance in that, seeing what they did the offensive line, I think is a good way of looking at it. I feel like I get overly defensive probably when it comes to, listen, they're just doing whatever in training camp. What are you gonna learn from training camp? But those examples are poignant. I want to try to sell you on something now, Matt. I want to sell you something worth $1.3 million. And you're going to be selling it with me, really. I'm trying to sell something worth $1.3 million. We haven't used it at all ever. We've had it kind of in the back for a little bit, but we can sell it for $1.3 million. No drawbacks or whatsoever. All we lose is Tyler Bray. What are we waiting for?
You're wanting to release Tyler Bray.
Tyler Bray, you can completely cut bait on Tyler Bray and save $1.3 million against the cap. No dead cap space to work with whatsoever. It's a completely clean cut. I guess at this point I've talked myself into thinking that maybe the Chiefs have said, we've got to make sure that Pat Mahomes is just any sort of capable in the instance of Alex Smith, you know, getting hurt or dying on the field or whatever. But maybe they're protecting Mahomes so deeply that they think it's worth $1.3 million. But even then, it's Tyler Bray. They didn't trust Tyler Bray half as much as they trusted Nick Foles last year. And that upsets me. Do I have a case? Will you hear my case in court?
I would hear your case. I have to say I'm a little intrigued by Tyler Bray only because as an undrafted free agent in 2013, like an entire high school class has like lived out their entire experience.
That literally exactly what I've done. I started college when the Chiefs signed Tyler Bray. Now I am an alum.
There you go. I mean, in other words, there's something in the building. I mean, whether Tyler Bray is secretly dating someone's daughter or has some kind of blackmail, or that maybe there's something there. You know, they turned in a draft card for Aaron Murray and then waved goodbye to him. They did the same for Kevin Hogan, waved goodbye to him after just a couple of months. The man still standing after all this time is Tyler Bray, and we still don't even know what we have in him.
Right, what is he good at?
I just find it a little fascinating. I just want to know, like, what do you guys see in him? And you know, and as they keep him around, it makes me almost wish we could find out.
But if they had any real faith in him, we would have seen him at least get ahead of Nick Foles, and you could keep Kevin Hogan on the roster. Or maybe you see him, and maybe they think he's good enough to be the backup to Patrick Mahomes a year from now after they give him more millions of dollars to continue to just wait third in line. Or if he had any sort of trade value, I would feel like he wouldn't be here anymore. I am baffled. I'm intrigued, but I've been exactly that. I've been intrigued by Tyler Bray for almost a half of a decade at this point. And I'm a little bit empty of my Tyler Bray optimism, but it's fine. It's okay. I will try to pick up those $1.3 million, and you can continue to spend them on your intrigue. That's fine. I won't hold it against you, but I'm a little upset.
Let's at least highlight the fact that Tyler Bray has had a longer than average NFL career at this point.
Right. And hasn't, I mean, I guess he was active for the games last year whenever Nick Foles was starting the game last year. I wonder how many games he's been actually active for. I'm not going to look it up, though, because I don't care that much, because he's an inconsequential player. It bothers. I don't know.
1.3. 1.3 million is consequential.
That's real money.
It is real money.
The Chiefs publicly executed Jay Howard for barely more. We don't even know how that works still. Ugh.
Yeah, that was very disheartening to me. I had a moment of silence for Jay on that one.
It was very strange, wasn't it? Because to the best that I understand this cap situation, and again, like, I'm not a rocket scientist, so I'm going to miss something, is that they're basically now gaining cap space, like cap credit, for next year based off of how much the Bears are paying him this year. Is that semi-accurate?
I want to say so.
Okay.
I also realize anything I say right now is going to be me kind of sort of making it up and kind of sort of probably some truth. Yeah.
Okay. Good. We're on the same. We're in the same boat there. The boat of
good.
Not understanding the cap or why exactly the Chiefs cut Jay Howard, but.
There you go.
Another thing that you wrote about that had a little bit of traction and it's kind of an interesting, weird story is that Michael Vick talked about wanting to get into coaching and then said that he would love to be coaching under Andy Reid. Can you expand on that a little bit and sort of tell the people who haven't heard that story yet what's going on there?
Yeah, Michael Vick appeared on a podcast with a sportscaster host named Howard Eskin this week.
Mm-hmm.
And Vick came out saying he was ready to turn the corner to a coaching career. He officially retired from the league in February of this year, although he didn't play at all last year. So he had his last action in 2015, but now feels ready to officially stop trying out, stop hoping. And so in the process, he said he would love to either start his coaching career with his home team, the Atlanta Falcons, who gave him his first chance. And I think he still remains close with the Falcons owner, Arthur Blank, at this point. However, also, is the obvious connection with Andy Reid. So he even mentioned that Reid has even asked him, you know, like, hey, what's your interest and what are you doing nowadays? And he came out and said, you know, I would love to join Andy Reid's staff and learn under Andy Reid. So, of course, that would be with the Chiefs. And then, of course, with that would come everything that comes with Michael Vick.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we really saw some traction over at Arrowhead Attic this week of people – you know, both interested in the story and then with a pretty immediate response of either, oh, yeah, you know, that would be great. Vic was an electric, electric talent on the field and probably has some things in common with Patrick Mahomes or could teach, you know, could help translate that as a player to Mahomes and that kind of stuff. And then there were some others who just had your obvious keep that guy away from my favorite team as much as possible or as far away as possible. So, it was just interesting to see, you know, people responding to this sort of what-if scenario.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this one, Matt. The talk has already begun about training camp and the surprise cut. I don't need you to, you know, give me a definite tearaway prediction here, but what are a couple of positions or a couple of guys you're watching especially closely to say, you know what, this position's a little fuller than I expected. Therefore, this guy is fighting for his job a little harder than most might expect.
Mm. Man, that's tough to say. You know, defensive back is loaded for the Chiefs. At the same time, the Chiefs play more defensive backs than you know really any other team. They're in the dime package almost 50% of the time. So, if I had to throw out a surprise cut, I'd say Derek Johnson.
Really?
As silly as that sounds, I just think. The Chiefs already looked at Jay Howard and said, we don't like how you're coming along physically. We're moving on.
Right.
And, you asked for a surprise. There's a surprise.
It would
there.
Be a surprise. I would be shocked, especially because they didn't address the inside linebacker position virtually at all since Derek Johnson got hurt last.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would depend on how much they feel like this new guy's ready. I mean, you know, you asked me for a surprise. So
right. Sure.
Surprise. I don't really think that's going to happen. I think a lot of the cornerbacks. I think Philip Gaines is in danger of losing his roster spot.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't think Terrence Mitchell's a lock, despite the incredible way he played in a handful of games down the stretch. I think it's going to be kind of a blank slate this offseason for most of the corners, and I think they're going to have to play, for their lives. And there's a ton of them there, and even some of the developmental guys that they added. Ashton Lampkin from Oklahoma State, Devin Chapel from Oregon State. Lampkin's coming in as a killer special teamer right out of college. So you're talking about a cheap, experienced guy coming in that they may just like and to be on the roster for longer than maybe a Philip Gaines, who's going to be a free agent after this year.
Right.
So it may behoove them to actually – I think Dorsey's probably going to pull one or two trades with some of the guys before they get cut, even if it's just flipping them for conditional seventh-round picks in the next year or something, at least to get something out of them.
Well, actually, and again, maybe next time somebody asks you this, you can have the correct answer is actually Tyler Bray.
Or Tyler Bray, right?
But whenever you get asked that next time, feel free to pull that one. Matt, I really appreciate it. Great stuff. Again, this is Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict, the editor of Arrowhead Addict. You can find him on Twitter at MattConnorAA. And Connor is spelled with an E, not two O's, which I've made that mistake a many a time. So
you have. You have. I've never forgiven.
Man, I didn't know you remembered, though. That's way scarier than actually just making the mistake. The never forgetting Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. Matt, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff there from Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. We'll unpack it when we get back. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
I wonder if we could, like, set up an elaborate role-play scenario where we would just call in and give your best post-game question, and then I would be Ned Yost and try to answer them as well as I could.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Talk about a Soria's performance there in the third.
Talk about! Don't ask me a talk about question! I'm bleeping Ned Yost!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Listen, I thought Jack really had a good outing. I should quit this radio thing and start doing impressions professionally. I'm really good at that. Raul Mondesi is in Minnesota. Alex Gordon is going on a 3-day paternity leave after the first game. Gordon is playing in game one. That all via Rustin Dodd on Twitter. I thought that interview with Matt Connor was very interesting. He brought up a couple of points I want to unpack a little more, and then I brought up a point I want to unpack a little more because I'm very smart. The main thing that Matt brought up that I hadn't even considered for a moment is Alex Smith's trade value after this season. The Chiefs gave up two second-round picks to go get Alex Smith. They gave up a bunch of picks to go, I mean, not a bunch of picks. They gave up basically a first and a third to go get Pat Mahomes. But they're going to be able to recoup some of that for Alex Smith if they want to. I hadn't even considered that as a possibility. But after Matt broke it all down, I think it's now rather probable. Because you're going to find the team, like, ideally, if Ben Roethlisberger retires, a team that will be trying to draft their guy for the future, but say, listen, we've got a window now. We want to win in 2018. We don't want to wait until 19 or 20, because 19 or 20, we might not have Le'Veon Bell, and we might not have the same version of Antonio Brown that we have. So give us Alex Smith. He's going to be the guy on the open market who's going to give you the best chance to win right away. Now, what win means is going to be a lower ceiling, because I'm sure there are plenty of Chiefs fans hearing me say that now and saying, you know, what do you mean? What do you mean he's going to give you a chance to win? You've been crushing Alex Smith's limitations for a good long while now. And that's true. I have been. But if you're, it's the thing that plenty of teams will choose to believe. I'm not sure that I would ever make that move. But if you're a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you want to make sure you keep your job for a little while as you do this whole rebuilding thing, if they give up on if they were still working on Blaine Gabbert, that'd be even sadder, although Blaine Gabbert does have an actual job. If they give up on Blake Bortles after this year, if they say, you know what, we tried, and we got a pretty good team around him, but Blake Bortles is not going to get it done. If you're a little bit delusional in the Jags front office, you could say, hey, let's go get Alex Smith. Let's give up a second for Alex Smith. I think Matt's a little bit optimistic as far as the potential for like a first-round pick coming back. But let's give up a second or a third-round pick for Alex Smith. We can contend in the AFC South if we just have a decent quarterback, a quarterback who won't diminish our team's value. And Alex Smith can absolutely do that. Also, he won't be playing on the contract he'll have next year, but if he gets traded, he could agree to a restructure with some team and get some more years locked in, and then eventually he becomes the obvious backup to whoever the Steelers draft and develop. You know, if Ben Roethlisberger retires or whatever. I thought that conversation, that point that Matt brought up was fascinating because I hadn't even considered it. The other thing that Matt said is look to the scenarios of Mitch Morse and Parker Anger. the Chiefs, if they when they find the young guys they want to take over a position, they're going to give them the snaps in training camp to get them ready. They didn't try to protect the feelings of Eric Kush whenever it was between Kush and Mitch Morse for that center spot. They said, listen, we're giving Mitch Morse every snap. They said all the right things, you know, it's a competition and blah, blah, blah. But they gave Mitch Morse all those snaps. They gave Parker Anger all those snaps last year. I think we're going to see Kareem Hunt get a lot of early snaps in training camp. And it's really going to be a little bit of an indicator, maybe a lot of an indicator, of what the Chiefs are hoping from that position. The other thing is, I still don't know what the hell Tyler Bray is. I mean, I know who he is. He's been around my life for longer than most of my friends at this point. I just don't know what he's good at.
This is Sports Sunday.
I think you tweeted something about your breakfast and you wanted me to retweet it.
That is absolutely true, actually.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I wanted the 810 audience to know about the two cuties I had for breakfast this morning.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
By the way, I mean oranges. Welcome back to the show. ESPN did a thing. You know how the first Monday Night Football broadcast of the year, they always have two games? And in previous years, it's been Chris Berman doing the second one. I think Chris Berman and Trent Dilfer, if I remember correctly. It doesn't matter. Chris Berman's retired. And now, the number two game in the Monday Night doubleheader is going to be announced by a woman named Beth Mowins and a man named Rex Ryan. You may have heard of at least the second one. But Beth Mowins is going to be the second woman to announce an NFL regular season or postseason game. And she's doing play-by-play, which is going to be something different for everybody, really. I think she had called a bunch of college football games. I mean, she's stepping in to take this role from whoever was working with Berman or from Berman himself. And frankly, I think it's pretty clear this is a ratings grab. This is putting aside reality and saying, what can we do here to get some extra eyeballs on this game? You're bringing in somebody completely unqualified, bring them into the spot to try to appease the ESPN fan base, just chasing headlines, chasing ratings. It's true. It's all absolutely true. Rex Ryan's completely unqualified for that job. Did I get you? Did I get anybody? I hope there's somebody in their car just nodding like, yeah! Yeah, you're right! They can't let a lady call a football game? How dare they? What a disgrace! Shameful! Rex Ryan has no place in the booth. I thought that was worth like a 2-minute talking point. There's an article in the Sporting News. Mowins has worked in a variety of sports, mostly at the college level. She's been the voice of the Women's College World Series. She has called men's and women's basketball games, as well as helping in coverage of the 2011 Women's World Cup in Germany. And and then it says afterwards, Ryan was hired by ESPN in a short role for the Super Bowl in February when no teams expressed interest in the offseason. Ryan signed a longer contract with the network. Ryan made his debut as a game announcer for ESPN when he called the Florida State spring game in April. It's not really the epitome of hyper-qualified, but you don't have to be. You just got to be entertaining in that role. And I guess ideally not detracting from the purity of the game itself, because a lot of people really, really, really hated Bill Walton doing a KU game. who was entertaining as hell, but distracted from the product that you were tuning in for. Obviously, Rex Ryan being in the booth was not the story of that story, but it's going to be really interesting. I'm going to be on Twitter during that opening Monday night looking to see what people are tweeting as a female voice guides them through a Monday Night Football game. How will we ever recuperate? Sprinkling something about ESPN's liberal agenda. I don't know. I really don't understand the backlash to stuff like this, honestly, because it's not flipping the meritocracy on its head as if anything actually is a meritocracy. Because, again, Rex Ryan, his qualifications are being a really loud, obnoxious, vivacious former head coach. So you put him in the role to do color commentary for a game. I don't expect him to be good. I expect him to be Rex Ryan. You know, Tony Romo, Jay Cutler are getting roles that they haven't been preparing for other than just being around the sport. So the class of people that are just infuriated by the female referee, I think there are multiple female referees now, but I don't know that for sure. But initially, whenever the NFL brought in its first female referee, this female voice of Monday Night Football for, again, the second game, she's doing one game for ESPN. But the backlash against things like that, the female color commentator for Sunday Night Baseball, the backlash to that, I think, simply has to be a discomfort with diversity, with a voice that you're not used to hearing, literally a tone of voice, an octave that doesn't usually give you second down and nine. But I don't know what else you could be objecting to if you're being at all intellectually honest with yourself, right? Because I think most of us at this point in May of 2017 are pretty well over, like, women don't care about sports. You can say, okay, the majority of sports fans are dudes. I guess that's true. That's probably true. It seems like a true thing. Is it just you only want to hear from voices that reflect the majority? That's not a very... not a very helpful perspective if you have any interest in getting anything other than a completely homogenized worldview. So I'm excited to see how this broadcast turns out. Another thing from the gridiron. That sounded really dorky. The Oakland Raiders are in contract negotiations with Derek Carr. And it sounds like there's a bit of turmoil there. This from an article on FanSided by Matt Verderam. It says, Carr is reportedly healthy now and wants a long-term deal. The interest is mutual, but the money involved might cause stagnation in the talks. With a 26-year-old set to become a free agent after this season, the Raiders have a set of options. They can either let Carr walk in free agency, sign him to an extension, or apply the franchise tag in March. They're not going to let him walk. They're probably going to sign him long-term. And look at Washington if you're considering the merits of franchise tagging your quarterback. It's going to end poorly for Washington. And Carr's probably going to be, and there's something Matt points out in this article, Carr's probably going to be looking at Andrew Luck-type money. And before last season began, Andrew Luck signed a 5-year deal worth $123 million with $87 million in guaranteed money. So you can set that up however you want. It's basically 3 years, 4 years, $87 million guaranteed, more than that to get through that actual fourth year. Quarterbacks are really, really expensive right now. And if you have Andrew Luck, you're going to pay him. The Packers will pay Aaron Rodgers anything that he wants for as long as he wants to play football. And they should. But when do you decide when a guy doesn't deserve that kind of paycheck? And this is where everything gets so interesting right now. There's really not a middle class in NFL quarterback pay right now. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick was close to it last year, but he made something like $13 or $14 million. I believe Beards is on it. He just signed the deal with the 49ers. No, I'm sorry. The Buccaneers. Aha! I mixed up my below-average football teams. He just signed the deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a lower-class quarterback contract. It's 1 year, $3 million. A guy who would make a ton of sense in that middle class of quarterbacks would be a guy like Colin Kaepernick, who's still available, by the way. There are plenty of guys who deserve that mid-level money. A guy like Mike Glennon, even, who just got a pretty big deal. It's basically a one-year deal, but it's a big number. I think it's around 13 again. Beard, you have a report in on Ryan Fitzpatrick in 2016?
2016 was a one-year deal for $12
million. $12 million, okay. So that basically $12 million and up number is essentially the only middle-class quarterback place that we have right now. And that's not actually what a mid-level quarterback is worth if you have any understanding of how the salary cap works. And also just how the league works. This is something I talked about before the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes. Well before the draft. Looking at the fact that Alex Smith's contract is ending after this season. Not ending, I'm sorry. It becomes very easy to get out of after this season. It gives you a lot of cap space, relatively little dead money after the 2017 season. And I was saying, well before the draft, before the Chiefs even, I'm sure, had interviewed any of these quarterbacks, saying they need to find one of these guys at a value they like him at a place in the draft they like him at, and then get him as ready as possible before you give him the keys to the car. Because you can win in the NFL in two different ways. And there are exceptions to this, but there are largely two ways to win in the NFL. You either have elite quarterback play, or you get really solid quarterback play really cheaply. We talked about this yesterday. The quarterbacks to make the Super Bowl from the AFC since 2003, I believe, every single year, it's Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, or Peyton Manning, except for Joe Flacco's year. You have elite quarterbacks for a decade, and one exception in there, which was Joe Flacco having a really nice year on a rookie contract. What did that allow the Ravens to do? You can build a monster of a defense. You can afford to pay a monstrous defense because you're not paying your quarterback crazy money. Pretty simple math. And this is why I think it was so obvious the Chiefs needed to draft the quarterback this year. Because worst case scenario, at least hopefully, not actually worst case scenario, but a pretty neutral scenario here, is that a quarterback they bring in, now Patrick Mahomes, is decent. He's average. He's a lesser quarterback than Alex Smith. But he does it on a rookie contract. Your team is still better off. Because you're investing $13 or so million elsewhere. That's real NFL money. Well, we're seeing this market plateau. It has to be coming soon. Or at the very least, we're seeing teams start to resist the inflated market. Washington's doing it, and they're not by any means like the franchise to go to for how you should be spending your money in the league. But Washington has franchise tagged Kirk Cousins 2 years in a row, and they look poised to let him walk after the season, which is kind of crazy. And also, they've paid him a ton these last 2 years. Again, I don't think they've handled it very well, but they've really resisted giving Kirk Cousins a giant long-term contract. But for an NFL team to say, we've got a guy who's at least close to that franchise quarterback level. We've got the 10th best quarterback in the league. To have that guy and then to let him go is criminal. Your fan base will revolt. The Raiders fans would revolt if they let Derek Carr go. But again, from this fan-sided story, on the surface, Carr's numbers don't warrant a top-end deal. He's never thrown, this surprised me, he's never thrown for 4,000 yards in a season. Only once top 30 touchdowns in his three-year career. His record is 22-25. For comparison's sake, Andrew Luck threw for an average of 4,300 yards and 29 touchdowns over his first three seasons while winning a trio of AFC South titles. Derek Carr is a perfectly good quarterback to build your franchise around. But to pay like Andrew Luck is going to make... It's going to set the Raiders back. In fact, paying Andrew Luck like Andrew Luck is going to set the Colts back. Because they've got significant holes in that defense and that offensive line. They've got to be able to spend money somehow. And if it's all invested in your quarterback... You eventually, if you're the Raiders, have to pass on a guy like Sean Smith, although that would have been helpful for them last year probably. You have to pass on Rodney Hudson. You have to pass on the beefing up of your offensive line because you've got all that cap space invested in your quarterback. Ideally, NFL teams should be drafting a quarterback every 3 years, and the Chiefs should be drafting their next Patrick Mahomes to take over for Patrick Mahomes in a few years unless Patrick Mahomes becomes Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, John Elway, whatever. And I'm not super ready to throw Patrick Mahomes into this. But as you look at what's going to happen to Derek Carr, what he's going to make, what Andrew Luck is going to make, eventually you say, wait a second, this is too much. The cap doesn't leave space to have this quarterback and a good team around him. And that means eventually you have to make some very, very difficult decisions. Thanks to Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. Thanks to Scott Chasen of whatever it is that he's currently working for. Thank you, Beards McFly, for the 2 days of wonderful producing. I only missed Charlie Carlin a lot still.
Wow.
This has been Sports Sunday. Bye, Mom!